The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I feel like I have to do it quiet because you sound like you just woke up. The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is brought to you by Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds. Get yours at bigbarker.com/Ricky. And the Colony Meadery, the official gluten-free booze made from honey of the process. On today's Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast, I sound like I'm on WXPN now or inside the actor studio. It's a summer league time. Mike is in Las Vegas for the Summer Sixers, has taken in two games and, well, a lot of other games, but two Sixers games and an earthquake. So we will overreact to every summer league dribble, shot, and pass. And also, we will talk about the big change in the NBA power structure as Kawhi Leonard goes to the Clippers, which is hilarious for everybody involved except for Mike's girlfriend, which we'll find out about that as well. Without any further ado, here is Run the Jewels.
We are the murderous pair. Dealt with the jail and we murdered the murderers there. Deal with the hell and discovered the devil delivered some hurt and despair. Used to have power to push. Now I smoke pounds of the push. Holy, I'm burning the bush. Now I give a fuck about none of this shit. True runner over and out of this bitch. Step into the spotlight.
Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy who always goes all in and always lets it ride when he's in Las Vegas. That is Mike Levin. Morning, man.
Every year, baby. Every year we do this. Every year I always stay out a little too late when I know that you're just waiting for me when I wake up. So on the other side of the mountain is Spike, always a little earlier than you think.
I'm like when I wake up sometimes in the morning and I'm not ready to get up and my dog is standing on the bed with his tail wagging, just like fucking ready to go. I imagine I am sort of a human version of that too,
yeah.
Right here.
That's what it feels like, yeah.
So before we get to summer league stuff, I have to know, Mike's girlfriend Alyssa is a Lakers fan, and you did tweet at some point about her reacting at dinner to the Kawhi news or something of the like. I have to know how she is handling the news of Kawhi Leonard going to the Clippers and not the Lakers.
Well, so that this would be, I don't want to go too far into it because it would be stepping on the Summer League episode
okay.
of journalist Mike out on the street.
Okay. Which we have coming yeah. soon.
But not well at first, although she is, Alyssa is handling it, I would say, better. She's coming around to it. I think she's going through the stages of grief. Kawhi
she in denial George. Now?
Yeah, no, she's past that now, but it is, okay. Yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot for something to happen, like, while we were already out and, like, having a nice dinner. And then, there's a lot of demons there from Clippers' childhood memories.
Well, my opinion is that Kawhi Leonard was never going to the fucking Lakers. Never, never, never. I don't think. And the reporting, I read the, I'm not a big into like long articles, but I did read the Mark Stein piece, and I forget who wrote the ESPN one, like on the Kawhi courtship. And like, if he drug this out specifically to make it worse on the Lakers, I think that is amazing if it's true. I think it's probably more likely, as the piece alluded to, that they were working on the Clippers getting another star, and that's what caused the delay. But like, I just don't believe that. I know I slag on LeBron a lot, but I just don't believe that any other star who is in their prime specifically, like, wants to go and deal with his horseshit. Like, I just think it's too much, and too many of these guys have, like, pride. Like, and I don't say this in the sin of pride way, but, like, pride and ego, and, like, the last thing they want is to, and the whole LeBron thing, even if you're not worried about being, like, second fiddle or third fiddle, it just, it seems like such a drag to be involved in. if you're a star player. Now, if you're a role player, LeBron always seems to make those guys better, specifically if you can shoot. But I, like, over and over again, guys have decided not to go play with him, and I don't think it's a coincidence that the one guy who ended up there in AD is represented by the same agent. And I do wonder if that wasn't the case, if AD would be like, I want to go play with LeBron. So I don't know. I just don't think he was ever going to the Lakers.
I don't know. I think there's always a lot of justification after the fact of like, oh, it was always this, but it seemed really up in the air for a long time. And I like and respect what Oklahoma City did to sort of leverage the Clippers offer with the Toronto offer and sort of making the best out of the situation, which, you know, the guy that just signed a 3 or 4 year deal to stay.
Yeah.
Coming a year later and saying like, ah, never mind.
Right.
And you could, I mean, he could have pulled the like, no, fuck that. We're not trading you. But, I just think that they're the way the league is, the players have a lot of agency, and they, I think the smart teams have figured that out for better or for worse. That's the way it is. Sometimes you have to, you know, they're the talent. Like,
yeah.
Well, no one's going to be like ever too hard on like a, you know, Meryl Streep type actor, because like if people are coming to see Meryl Streep, they're not coming to see like a Disney executive. Like you have to, you know, they're not coming to see like the owner of the Jazz. Like these are the guys. You have to make them happy like all the time. You have to constantly, or they'll walk. And that's like they'll stop playing. They'll do what AD did. And does that make for like a healthier league? I don't know, but it's cool to see the players like sort of take things into their own hands and not just be stuck in a bad situation if they don't want to be there.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings on that. I don't think what AD did was right, and I do think like they're part of getting a guaranteed. You know, the NFL is different in that even though the all the rules are collectively bargained and it maybe shouldn't be different. In that the deals are not guaranteed, so your future is a little like more up in the air. The NBA, I think, if you sign a, you know, part of the trade-off of getting that assurance of getting all that money and all that time is like you should be there, I think, in some way through the ups and the downs, or at least you should live up to it if you can't come to an agreement. So I think what AD did and what Clutch did with AD was like, It just sort of if you don't want to be somewhere for 5 years, then don't sign a 5 year deal. Do what you know the other guys do and say 2 year deals or sign the. So I think the way that it happened with Paul George was better in that it happened in the off season and it the team I think ended up doing, and we could talk about like how it affects the Sixers because it actually does affect the Sixers in terms of that draft pick. They benefited fine from it, even though they had to pivot in a way that they didn't plan. But to your point about it being up in the air, it's just funny that like the entire, at least my perception was, and I had said it a lot, but I thought a lot of people were saying it, everyone just assumed that Kawhi was going to go to the Clippers, like most of the year. And then in the last, I think obviously him winning the championship in Toronto threw that for a loop. But I didn't hear much of anything about the Lakers all year. All I heard about was the Clippers. You know, like they sent guys to his games and they were sort of just maneuvering for, and by the way, we sort of helped in giving them assets for a trade to allow them to get Paul George. Now, in one way, it did get Kawhi out of the Eastern Conference. In the other way, it created like a fucking wing version of our defense, you know, out west, which is pretty wild. I don't know. I think there's a lot to it, but I agree with you that I'm not sure if it makes for a better league and a better product, but it is interesting, and I hope that everyone just sort of stays where they are for a little bit. I would like that.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll happen. I think it's tough because I do. I'm obviously in favor of player power, and they should be able to play whatever they want. But there also should be like some consequences of like, you know, living with the choices that you made. Like if like AD requesting a trade, he shouldn't be able to get a trade kicker. Like if That should, that should go away. But then it's like, okay, well, I'm not going to formally request a trade. I'm just going to like act out and stop showing up. And it's like, well, what is that? You know?
Right.
There's like things that it's just, it is a very sort of, there's a lot of gray area in there, and it kind of makes everybody, nobody comes out of it looking good. Like if mm-hmm. the Thunder decided we're not going to trade Paul George, then they would be hurt on the back end. Like they wouldn't, that they got to capitalize while his value is highest, which is now, and it would just poison the well and change absolutely everything. So it's tough, but I thought Sam Presti did a good job to like come away with a pretty decent haul. What you mentioned about the pick is tough because the Sixers, I can't believe I have to do it again, had traded Markelle Fultz to the Orlando Magic for Jonathan Simmons, who we all love.
Yep.
And a 2020
Human Victory cigar. We'll get to that later.
And a 2020 Oklahoma City first round pick in next year's draft, but it was protected top 1 through 20, so that means that the Thunder would have to be one of the 10 best teams in the league for that to convey. And it was looking, I would say, somewhat likely, like 60% that would happen. But now that they traded Paul George and they're probably going to trade Westbrook, it shuts it down. So we will that will now become 2 second-round picks. That's the way it goes.
Well, so here's my only, you know, people are pretty set on us losing that pick. I would caution against that being an automatic thing. First of all, I know that they said they're talking about trading Westbrook, or Westbrook is meeting with the organization based on his future and so on and so forth. But like they did get, aside from the draft picks, they got 2 good players in the trade in Gilgeous Alexander and Danilo Gallinari. And I did not that I think anybody would have thought differently, because most of the difference is Gallinari's health, I think, is often in question. But Gallinari, his numbers last year were basically exactly the same as Tobias Harris's. And I think that basically means they're getting a good rotation player who can shoot, by the way, and is a really good, you know, has a high release and can get a shot off quick. And Gilgeous Alexander is good. And if they don't make a trade, I certainly think that Oklahoma City team could go to the playoffs. I certainly think they could. I don't know if they will, but they certainly could. And if they trade Westbrook, I don't know that like the Westbrook trade means they got to get $40 million back, or they got to trade to a team who has $40 million in space, which is nobody. So maybe it's a reboot on the run, and maybe I think it's possible that the two times Rudy Gay got traded, that the team got better. Mm-hmm. You know, Memphis got better and Toronto got better, and both teams on some level, specifically Toronto, were trying to tank, and it didn't work because they actually got better without him. I think it's possible that if they trade Westbrook, that this team maybe gets a little deeper and maybe does make the playoffs. And I think with Westbrook, they could make the playoffs too. So I wouldn't write off that pick just yet, is maybe. I guess what
okay.
I would say.
I like the optimism. I love Shea. I could see a Westbrook for like some trade centered around like Westbrook and John Wall, so that they would like essentially be taking on dead money. Or I could see Presti being like, look, we're in Oklahoma City. We don't have the luxury of tanking and rebuilding, so we got to be good. We got to at least make an effort. We can't, even with all these picks. I could see him turning around, flipping them, and maybe trying to get something around Brad Beal like that, you know, or Kevin Love or something like that. So I think maybe there is a chance that later in the season or once, you know, something. Yeah, okay. I'm on board. I'm still rooting for that pick.
There we go. This week's Willie Green, Apple Podcasts, 5-star review. We are at 2,421 on our way to 3,000. When we get to 3,000, I have to do another podcast reading all of the reviews from 2,000 to 3,000. This one was sort of disturbing. I hate that somebody like this exists in the world and I don't know who he is, or he or she, I guess. The subject line is, I hate that I love Spike's content. I listen to the pod the morning after recording at work and turn into a hollow shell of myself once I hear Mike say, yeah, you know, Lickface, because my favorite pod has ended. And yet for the next 5 or 6 hours at work, I think to myself, why do I like this so much? Why do I listen to two guys with very little chemistry complain about how the 76ers second rounders aren't performing? The main factor is Spike. I love the art of the take. I love this pod. I like his work with WIP, but I hate Spike. He's almost too likable that he wraps back around to being unlikable again. The only way I can get back at my deep hatred for his character is to troll him on Twitter, my favorite personal pastime. Yesterday, my idol slash nemesis replied to my tweet by saying, what does that even mean? You don't need to reply to every one of my tweets. But he doesn't know 5 stars would hate listen again. Do you feel that way about anybody? How that guy seems to feel about this podcast and me?
No, I feel the same way about you.
I think our review. I think our chemistry has evolved quite nicely, to be honest with you.
We've been doing this long enough. I've been on fucking chemistry.
6 years. Then
what the fuck are we doing here?
Actually, our now that you mention it, our Wednesday or the 10th is our 6 year anniversary of the pod.
Yeah.
July 10th. I'd forgotten about that.
Always
6 years.
Born amid Summer League. That's how it feels.
We will get to Summer League right after we talk about our sponsor, Big Barker Dog Beds. Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds. Real beds for real dogs. Important beds for important dogs. One of my coworkers, Elliot Shore Parks, ordered a Big Barker for his dog. It's the first dog he ever had. And he said it took a little while for the dog to get used to the Big Barker, but now won't get off of it. That's sort of like Rebel. Rebel right now is sleeping on his Big Barker at 11:18 in the a.m. He doesn't usually get to sleep on the Big Barker during the day when we're out of the house, but the weekends, he likes it. Big Barker dog beds are real beds for your dog, real support, supportive foam that supports the dog's joints as it sleeps, as opposed to those fake beds you get in stores that are bullshit. Your dog is important. My dog, as I've mentioned several times, the most important thing in my living life. And his comfort and his health is the most important thing in the world to me. It should be to you, too. Not for my dog, but for your dog. Go to BigBarker.com/Ricky. Go to BigBarker.com/Ricky. You get the free Ricky upgrade, which is the Big Barker dog bed, but you also get the process pup patches that you can iron on. And a coworker of mine, Kenny, texted me because he didn't know how to iron on the patch. You just take the iron and you put it on the patch, on the cover, and then it irons on in about a minute. It's pretty easy. Mm. But that way you don't have to have the patch on there if you don't want to. But it is a cool patch. Love the design. The beds are legit. They last 10 years. The foam doesn't flatten or they replace it for free. If your dog doesn't like it, they will refund your money and pay for shipping within 1 year. And I know I said Big Barker, and it was specifically designed for Eric, the guy who owns Big Barker, his dog Hank, because it's a huge dog, but they have all different sizes. Barker Jr., regular size Big Barker. It doesn't need to be a big dog. Like I said, 1 year at home trial, handmade in the United States of America. Big Barker dog beds.
Woof, woof.
All right, summer Sixers. First thing I have to ask you about, because it brought back memories of the one earthquake I was in, was where were you when the earthquake happened? I assume you were watching Zion in the Thomas and Mack Center.
Yeah, so we were there for the Zion game. He's very good. It's very exciting to watch him live. It's really a special thing. He was still very rusty, but still does crazy special things on the court. He had gotten hurt, like sort of banged knees, and they took him out as a precaution, which is sort of a summer league tradition at this point with number one picks. And so we had left about 90 seconds before the earthquake, me and Alyssa and a couple friends that we were with. And we didn't feel it.
Hmm.
Yeah. And I didn't feel the one in L.A. The day before. So that was 2 for 2. People were kind of freaked out, especially people that haven't spent much time on the West Coast. But it was pretty. It was fun. It was a fun talking point. Nobody was hurt. I like that Alonzo Trier dunked during the commotion of the thing possibly falling down. That's absolutely his mindset. funny to see
the Dodgers game. the Dodgers game just kept going. You mentioned not feeling it. The Dodgers game, like the players didn't even stop. They just kept going, which I wonder if just standing on like an open field like that, if you don't see things moving, how that feels. I mentioned that when I was a freshman, I went to USC, and there was an earthquake when I was there that I think was like a 4.6, which is not big at all. But immediately afterwards, I decided I couldn't live there anymore. But to your point about it being fun, everyone on my floor at my dorm at Parkside is where I lived, who was from Los Angeles, were all laughing and acting like they were surfing. And meanwhile, I just, all I wanted to do was go home. It was the scariest thing in my life. You can't run from it and you don't know it's coming. Like even a hurricane, there is some warning. There's no warning with an earthquake. It just fucking happens. It's crazy, man.
Yeah.
So
it's one of those things that you get scared about. And when it's happening and then a little after, and then you're like, okay, I'm going to focus for, I'm going to really learn everything about what to do when this happens,
right,
so I can save the day. And then a couple hours goes by and you're like, what are you going to do? It's going to be fine. And then you keep going, living your life.
Yep. I think there is some denial. I think there is some level of denial. And I think we all actually sort of, we practice that denial in the everyday dangers of our life, no matter where we live. And I think part of it in Southern California is the earthquake denial.
Mm-hmm.
So Sixers, it was I think compared to last year, it was a, where we didn't have a ton to watch. This was a much closer to what we're used to as far as guys that we have an eye on. Did you feel that?
Yeah. I like any version of the summer Sixers. It's you know, the roster gets released and I get to be like, okay, I remember these guys. Some of these guys I actually really like. Some of these guys I've heard about a little bit, dig into their stats and think like, that guy could be interesting. And then I like start to target those guys in my mind, and then the games come and it's like, all right, three of those guys aren't playing. they're just here to like practice. It's like, okay, fuck. But the Sixers this year at least have five, you know, three guys that are on the roster, mm-hmm, and then two, one guy that's definitely a two-way and the other guy probably a two-way, and a couple other interesting guys. So, they're lacking in some dynamic shooting and more heavy on just like length and disruptiveness and stuff, but it's a great summer Sixers team. One of my favorites, probably my favorite summer Sixers team ever.
So let's go through guy by guy, I guess. We'll just go one by one through the guys that I think are important, and then we'll throw in some of the lesser important guys. You want to start with Zaire?
Yeah. I mean, the caveat, and I started doing a thread on Twitter last night of the guys that I liked, of basically everybody.
I was going to say.
And
how do you whittle that down?
I can't whittle it down. But then it was taking too long for me to like get it down to 140 characters at each time. And then we had to go to dinner and I was like, I'll figure it out. I'll do the rest later. And so really it's like, here's a thread about all the guys I liked. And I just did Zaire and I was like, I'm going to dinner. It's like that was really bad. if you're following me on Twitter, you're not following me for me following through on anything. Zaire looked good, I would say, doing the things that he's really good at. And tried to do too much in the other things. Like, if you let him dribble for too long, I do think that there's upside in his, like, dribble drive game. I think that he's smart enough and talented and athletic and can make things happen. But he just hasn't translated that to in-game action yet. So I do think there's upside there in the next, four or five years. But right now, he's good at the things he's good at, which is... He's a decent shooter off the catch, crashing offensive rebounds, and running out in transition and just like fucking dunking everything. But he's a good passer too. So I thought that his physicality on defense came back in a way that last year it wasn't there because he didn't trust his body after being for missing the whole year and losing 50 pounds and all that stuff. But he is the lockdown defender that the Sixers drafted. There was a time when this guy on the Bucks named Dalton Holmes, who I bet you liked, was hitting a bunch of shots, mostly outside shots, over Shayok and getting pretty clean looks at it. And I think that eventually they were just like, all right, fuck it. Zaire, you're going there. And so he took it personally and he shut it down. Like, that is the kind of guy he is, and that's how they look to him. And I'd be interested to see if he can do that against NBA competition. But I think that, you know, he's going to do that and then from there develop piece by piece.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of that. I you know, they were going over, I remember when I heard about what was going on with Zaire Smith when we weren't getting updates, and I heard about why we weren't getting updates, just because of the, you know, like the Sixers aren't allowed to divulge any of that without his permission, and how serious it was. And there was an article written about it, and they were going over it during the game. Like, Zaire Smith almost died. Like, we cannot forget the distance that he's come. I know we rightly give Joel Embiid credit for what he's bounced back from, but Joel's broken foot never almost killed him. Like, Zaire Smith, if he had eaten that food on a plane, he would be dead. Like, that's you know, he was, and they were going over it. He was on a feeding tube for like 5 months. It was outrageous. So the fact that he is out there playing and looking good is absolutely awesome. Mm-hmm. And I feel good to watch him. The one thing that you said that I definitely agreed with is the minute that he starts doing things that he's not good at yet, mm-hmm. is the minute that it sort of falls apart for him. And I hope that in a Spurs way, almost, that I imagine if he were there, they would do a good job of putting him in spots to just do what he's good at and not much else for a little while.
Right.
And look, there will be time now, summer league and preseason and garbage time games, where he gets a chance to put the ball on the floor or maybe, you know, shoot off the dribble on a 17-foot pull-up. But for now, he really has the ability to, he's put his weight back on, but I was thinking about what he's going to look like when he's 26 or 27 physically, and he's going to be a monster, you know, like when he puts, because he'll probably put another 15 pounds on, I would imagine, in the next 4 or 5 years. And when he becomes like a man physically, he'll be really, defensively, he has a chance to be really dominating and what's the word I'm looking for? Like intimidating defensively. Mm-hmm. But right now, he has a chance to guard guards, lead guards even, because he's quick enough to do it. And he's dunk off of cuts and shoot spot up threes now and then. And the shot looks like it's a work in progress, but also not bad by any means.
Yeah.
So I was encouraged by what I saw.
Yeah.
I just want people to have a realistic expectation of what he's going to do this year, you know, because it really is his first year.
I do think that there's a chance that he has a Jonah-type season where he falls in and out of the rotation as Brett gets frustrated with some of the mistakes that he makes. I do think that, you know, sometimes he's, when he plays within himself, he's really good and makes a simple pass and can hit an open look, that kind of thing. When he tries to dribble through traffic, he ends up sort of like doing like a weird spinaroo and flipping the ball over his head. It's like, oh, buddy, where'd that come from? He like suddenly becomes Jonathan Simmons, just gets zapped on the court. And it's like, oh, I'm Jonathan Simmons now. But what I found super interesting was you watched him last year at Summer League and he seemed very timid, nervous, mm-hmm. and like kind of alone on an island. And then I felt the same way, rightfully so, I think, when he was playing for Delaware, where he just never seemed to like get comfortable. The players didn't seem to like, the other guys didn't seem to like know him or there was no like camaraderie there. And it totally flipped. He is having like a great time out there. He's laughing around. He's like, he's like dapping guys. He's posing at the camera. Like, it's really odd how much he grew and feels more comfortable around these guys than he did last year. And you can tell even in just like post-game availability, like he's more comfortable and not as young, because they drafted him. He fucking came out after a freshman year, wasn't expecting to be a one and done, wasn't even really expecting to be in the NBA. And so I wonder if it just took some time there, but I'm surprised how quick it happened. The shot is he can rise up over people and shoot off the catch, and I think he gets so much lift that he gets a clear look at the basket all the time. There's just weird spin on the ball every time, and you can see it if you watch. I the press row of the at Thomas and Mack Center is behind the basket, and so I can see the spin on the ball. And you look at Shake's ball, and it's like that looks clean. You look at Matisse's ball, and you're like very clean. Same with Shayok, and then Zaire's just like there's just weird sort of like reverse, sort of side spin, like diagonal spin on it, and it just doesn't look right. He doesn't do that on his foul shots.
Free throw.
But on the when he's off the catch and jumping into it, it is evident. So I don't know if he's ever going to have like the prettiest jump shot, but hopefully it's functional enough. I wonder if they eventually try to, iron that out.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit. His shot doesn't look like it, but first of all, the difference. And you don't really know it until you step on a court and try it. The difference between the distance of a college three-pointer and a pro three-pointer is significant. It's really significant, I think, for a lot of players. And I think that's one thing. And, Tim Hardaway's ball, spun sideways, and Sean Marion's ball spun sideways. Mm-hmm. But you're right. I watch him shoot free throws, and it looks pretty normal. So I'll keep an eye on that, but I don't, people expecting him, he's not going to be, league average or prolific, not prolific and probably not league average from three. As long as he's shooting it willingly and he keeps working on it, there's nothing that shocks me in a bad way, from his shot. Now that doesn't mean he ends up being a good shooter, but the structure of his shot, nothing looks terrible to me.
Yeah, I think there's a chance that he could have a fake 42% 3-point shooting season. You know what I mean? Where it's like on
by shooting 1.2 a game or something. Not enough. Like
but
that.
I was encouraged by how much he was letting it fly in the second game. He didn't take I don't think he took any threes in the first game, but he was really confidently stepping into it. And he's going to run on transition. He's going to make good passes. He threw a reverse dunk alley-oop to PJ Dozier. And then the next play received a reverse dunk alley-oop. So, there's some next level ability there. And I think he's just going to be a good role player, really good role player eventually. And I think he'll show flashes of that, but he'll also still be young and kind of frustrating. So keep an eye out for that.
So let's move on to Matisse Thybulle, who somebody mentioned it to me and I had already thought it. And there are a lot of differences, but have you noticed that the way that he even runs is sort of Covington-y?
Mm-hmm.
Like there is something Covington-y about his follow through on his shot, and the way that he even moves physically is Covington-y. It
glides very smoothly.
Yeah. So here's what I noticed was that the 3-point shot is much better when he's just sort of standing there and waiting to do it. Form looks fine, looks pure. When he's not, there's not much there. And I think that everyone probably expected that coming in. And his defensive instincts are really good. His speed is really good. He does over-pursue in a way that a guy who played zone sort of over-pursues. Mm-hmm. But I was encouraged overall by how he looked.
Yeah, his sort of defensively, his signature play is whether it's over-pursuing for a steal or trying to fight through a screen, and the guy pulls up for a jumper and Matisse comes from behind him and blocks him from behind. And that happened a couple times. That happened to him, Carson Edwards. He's long. He's 7 foot wingspan. That's crazy for a guard and his speed and instincts. But I was interested to see, obviously, at what he would look like in a man-to-man versus in the zone, because in Washington the last 2 years he played zone. He's played at the top of a zone. And that's sort of how his NBA stock rised with people talking about his block and steal rates and how what his instincts were, but not having as much of an assignment of one guy. And so it was cool to see him run guys around screens. I thought he did a good job of not dying on any screens, of trying to take the angle on when Carson Edwards is running through screens and he kind of tries to cut it off I think there's really good instincts there. And he fights. He's got good hands. Mucks it up in there. His strong hands. Like, he's good. I mean, he's great. I love watching him defensively. Offensively, you're totally right. Off the catch, I thought he rose up really quickly. There was no wasted movement in that. It was like he was letting it fly. Off the dribble, doesn't have much dribble drive game into a jump shot, but I do think that he can attack a closeout. And there was one time when he had Yabusele on him, Yabusele closed out on three, and Thybulle drove by baseline and finished up and under. And that's, you know, those are just like the NBA level plays you're going to have to do. For the most part in the second game, it was a lot of Zaire and Matisse standing in the corners, and that's where they're going to be, but they're both smart cutters and they can both attack closeout. They can both make smart passes. So I was impressed by it. I thought, you know, he can pass out of Zaire and Matisse can pass out of off of drives in nice ways when they're playing composed, like as opposed to a guy like Shayak who kind of gets a little more tunnel vision. But I thought Matisse played very well. I was happy with his performance.
Yeah, I agree. The thing that if you're listening and want to know why, like, his three-point shot can't be as effective or won't likely be as effective as Covington. Covington's release point is so high, and he can shoot from so far out. And I think people forget, because his calling card became defense, that in college, Covington was a pretty, like, prolific three-point shooter. And then he set the record in the G League for three-point shots made. Like, that was his game before defense was his game. Can get it off quick, but mostly can get it off high and from far away. Mm-hmm. And I don't see that from Thybulle. And he's, you know, taller than Thybulle. And his release, like I said, his release point is much higher. But I did like the way he moved, and I was encouraged by how he played.
Yeah, and it was cool to see him. There were a couple, like, sets that were run for him to sort of come through a screen and just catch and shoot on the run. And there was just none of that at Washington. It was just passing the defense side to side and kind of staying there. And so it was cool to see him run through some screens and see, like, oh, he kind of has this capability. He's obviously not the shooter that Shamet is, but he's long and fast. And if he's going to rise up confidently, then that's, you know, I feel great about it. One of these guys is going to just hit in the regular season and
pop.
And just play like major minutes, probably over, like, you know, Ennis or whoever.
We will get to the rest of the guys after we talk about our sponsor, The Colony Meadery, Mead, M-E-A-D, gluten-free alcohol made from honey. Mike, I've taken to having a drink while we do our podcast almost always. And today, for the first time, I had never, so you remember the Joel Embiid, which is now banned and not allowed to exist anymore. Mm-hmm. And the Colony Meadery guys gave me a can of it when they saw me. They gave me like a box of like different flavors that I hadn't tried yet. And in the box was Joel Embiid, just to put on my shelf. And I figured, well, if the can is empty, I can also put it on my shelf. So I am drinking the Joel Embiid. It's really good. It is a Shirley Temple flavored mead that you can't get anymore. But that's the thing about mead and the Colony Meadery, is they have so many different flavors. And somebody asked me on Twitter, what's the alcohol content? Well, it depends on the mead you get. It could be anywhere from 5% to 15%. T-Tax, I always recommend. Grapefruit League, I always recommend. Lemon Laws, I recommend. And Mini Mead, I recommend. Go to the website, colonymeadery.com, M-E-A-D-E-R-Y, colonymeadery.com. Get yourself some mead, try it. There's canned mead, there's bottled mead. I like the canned stuff better. I think cold alcohol tastes better out of a can. And they're working right now for Lickface Volume 2. Volume 1 had the Vlade can. It was like a pumpkin spice one. Lickface Volume 2, tweet at them, at Colony Meadery, with ideas. If they use a suggestion, they'll give you something for free. I don't know what it is, but they'll give you something for free. You can get Colony Mead on the website at colonymeadery.com. Use code RUNITBACK, which is outdated, but all one word. Use code RUNITBACK for 9.1% off any order on the site, which is good through the summer. Run it, code RUNITBACK for 9.1% off any order. Or you can pick it up at any Wegmans in Eastern PA, Urban Village Brewing Company, Johnny Brenda's, DeBruno Brothers. Get yourself some cheese and mead. Or you could go up to the tap room in Allentown, have a tasting. It's good, man. There haven't been a lot of selections for gluten-free alcohol, but this is the best one. Again, go to colonymeadery.com. Use code RUNITBACK for 9.1% off. Also, Colony Meadery, a sponsor of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez 5K team for the Providence Animal Center Bark in the Park on October 26th. If you join our team, you get the t-shirt with my dog, Mike's dog, Embiid's dog, Ben Simmons' dog, Covington's dog, TJ's dog, all on the shirt. Go to rightsrickysanchez.com for more info. We have 30 members already, Mike. We want to get 100. We have 30 members on the team already. Yep. And $2,400 raised. We want to raise 15 grand. Must be 21 to drink. Please get buzzed responsibly. All right. On to Shake Milton. So his shooting numbers aside, because that really did not, I don't care one way or another. Here's my thing about Summer League, is that just because you look good in Summer League does not mean that you're going to be good in the NBA, because the competition is not the same. But if you're going to be good in the NBA, I think you sort of need to pop in Summer League. And I am worried about how little I see pop to my eyes from Shake Milton, in that he seems, and you can talk me down, this is not a ledge, this is just what I'm seeing.
You need a Shake Milton ledge.
Well, I think he looks a little slow to me. He is a pretty average for his position ball handler and a pretty average creator, even though he did throw some nice passes. But there is something all-star gamey about Summer League in that I don't think people are defending super hard. People were talking about him getting like significant backup point guard minutes. I don't see that at all. And I'm a little concerned that he's sort of a guy without a position, because he's not an incredible creator as a two guard. His shot, even though regardless of his shooting numbers, his shot looks fine to me. Mm-hmm. But something about Shake Milton doesn't pop at all to me when I'm watching. And I don't know. Summer League guards always seem to pop if they're any good.
Yeah, I hear that. I would disagree that they don't play defense. They don't play defense in Summer League. They play hard defense. They don't play smart defense. So
people are
like, you know, playing for their lives in some sense. Yeah, I do think the shot looks good, and I think he's capable of making it. Obviously, it just wasn't falling, and I think he started getting in his head and maybe started forcing it a little bit. He's not crazy athletic, and he's not crazy fast, but I think he plays the game like at a pace, like at a controlled pace that can be helpful to a team and can be helpful as just a backup point guard, sort of stabilizing force. He needs to be able to shoot to do a bunch of other stuff. Right now, I would say his game is best served as doing the sort of same thing that Zaire and Matisse would be doing, which is shooting threes off the catch, attacking closeouts, and making quick, smart passes. He's long enough to make up for his mediocre quickness, especially on defense, but he tries on defense, and he gets his hands in there, and he's smart about going for reaches and poking things out. But I think he's a smart player. There was one play at the end of at halftime, I think, of the first game against Milwaukee where the clock's winding down, bringing the ball up from in transition. There's like 3 seconds left, and he crosses half court, and he's going to try to get off like just a runner to beat the clock. And there's a guy next to him, and he sort of just like slowed down and let the guy run into him, and he got fouled with 0.1 seconds left. And it's just like there's a level of thinking the game there, and that is kind of unteachable. And I think he has that. I think his handle is smooth, but not like with the ability to break anybody down. But I think I do think he's a really good passer. I do think he's smart. When the shot's not falling, he's not athletic enough or fast enough to make up for it by doing a whole bunch of other things to score. He's just got to kind of be a facilitator at that point. But I agree with your premise that like Summer League doesn't matter unless you suck, and then it like kind of matters,
right? Right.
But I think he's smart enough, and I think that I do believe in the shot, and I think there's secondary creation abilities there, and he's going to keep working. And his teammates love him. He's really smart when you talk to him, and he knows, you know, he's got a good head on his shoulders. So,
Frosty freeze out guy, most likely.
Yeah,
we see that.
Come on, need it.
Yeah.
And I also was impressed by, in some sense, everybody's, but Shake being the guy who, after misses on whether rebounds or outlets, he's always looking up and trying to push tempo. Even though he's not fast, he's ready to like make that deep outlet pass to somebody if they're leaking. And I think that plays well. He's also got to get strong. I was talking to Jason Blevins of the Painted Lines, our friend who is also on the Fly the Process trip to Minnesota. Yeah.
Who I banned. I'll make that a temporarily banning because he, this little girl who, whatever.
What?
Jason's not really banned anyway.
I don't even know where that could have gone.
So we were on the plane on the way to Fly the Process, and this girl who was a big Covington fan and her dad were also on the plane. And they were both sort of like laughing at our group because they were going just to see Covington. And they were like, well, we have front row tickets. We're going to meet Covington. And I was like, in my head, I'm like, all right, well, good luck with that. But they were making fun of our group on the plane. And then we were down by the court to literally take a picture with Covington. And who's in our group? You can see the picture with you and me and Covington. There's this girl with a Wolves jersey staring right at the camera.
Oh, I know
and
that.
Blevins
I remember
gave,
that. I remember that girl.
Right. So Blevins gave her his pass. And she walked up to him when he went to take the picture to get a separate picture and an autograph from
him. Wow.
And I'm like, no offense. I know it's a little, I mean, she was like 14. Let's not act like she was like 9 or something. Like, you were being mean to us, fuck off, and Blevins was the one that gave her the pass.
Wow.
So I temporarily banned him.
What a ride.
Anyway, he's unbanned. Continue.
Yeah, I mean, he's just, Jason was saying he just got to get stronger, and he watched him play for Delaware last year, and you can tell that he can get pushed around sometimes. I thought he wasn't as out-muscled on really either end, but if he's going to play in the NBA, he's just got to be stronger. He's got to get his legs to be, you know, have a solid, more solid base so he can't get pushed around. And so he can, you know, he's going to have height advantage over guys covering him sometimes. So it'd be nice if he can sort of exert his will a little bit. It was very stark seeing him and Carson Edwards share the floor together because Carson is obviously very, very strong and thick and tough to move. And Shake, you know, couldn't overpower him and couldn't, like, you know, just drive right by him. But when he's more likely the situation is, especially when Simmons is out there, is he'll be off the ball and attacking closeouts, and that's what happened a couple times when somebody else was, like PJ Dozier or whoever was facilitating. He got matched up with Bonzi Colson a couple times on a switch or on a rotation, and Bonzi was a good college player at Notre Dame, sort of a fringe NBA player, so but he's not nobody, and he beat him off the dribble both times, and so that there is, I think there is upside there. He's just got to do it off, you know, with the shot setting everything up.
I got to tell you, so Carson Edwards was a guy that I watched really late in my YouTube big board watching, mm-hmm. and he ended up in the top 10. And I got to tell you something, Mike, watching that game was fucking killing me.
Yeah, man.
He's going to be good. First of all, he is strong as shit, yep. which you have to be if you're going to make up for being short. But, dude, he can fucking pull up from 28 feet, which is really important. He creates space on his drives. He knows how to, like, push you off with his shoulder and get a little bit of space. Dude, I wish we fucking had him. I really wish we didn't fuck up and we had him.
Yeah.
He's good.
He's very good. It's amazing watching him be covered by even a guy like Zaire, but he rises up so suddenly and he gets so much lift on his jumper that he can get a shot off really against anybody. He took bad shots. He missed shots badly because there is some level of, like, you know, right now he gets a lot of separation with his body off the ball, but on the ball
right.
he doesn't quite have it yet. He can't. The threat of the drive is not there for him in the way that it was always there for, like, Dame. But I do really, really believe in the shot. I really believe in the off-ball movement. I do think there's some Shamit to him with, obviously, like, the added strength. It's really tough to watch him on the Celtics. Yeah. It's really tough to watch Grant Williams on the Celtics. Those are two of my favorite players in the draft. Matisse was also, but it was like, I would have been fine with them only getting one of those three guys, but two of them going to Boston with picks that we gave them, it's rough. And I get, yeah. We've talked about this, but like I get the organizational ethos of like, we're going to have the bigger fucking guys and we're going to be strong and switchable and you're going to...
But he's strong and big.
For sure, but he's obviously 6 foot. Yeah. He's got 6'6 wingspan, but I just don't think, as much as I do like the Sixers kind of zigging or whatever, somebody's zigging and the Sixers going the other way of like, you guys are going to have like switchable guards. Well, guess what? Like you can't imagine, you know, have fun covering Al Horford with Garrett Temple. I do think that you could have abandoned that for a couple guys who are just good. And I think that Carson Edwards is one of those guys.
I agree with you. And I would be surprised if he's not in the league for 10 years. Mm-hmm. I would be pretty surprised if he doesn't figure that out. I got to tell you, man, Norvell Pell, I love that guy.
I know you do.
There are a lot of shades of, it's hard for me to tell. You were talking about they play hard defensively, but like not smart because they're playing with people they haven't played with before. So it's hard for me to tell, like there's obviously something wrong with Norvell Pell because he's 26 and he's like a two-way player. And he's fucking incredible athletically. There are shades of Rashawn Holmes there.
Yeah.
I have to imagine in the dunking and blocking, but not being in the right place positionally and getting 9 fouls in one game.
Yeah, 9 fouls is pretty impressive. Sohail Doshi of Liberty Ballers described it as Jakar energy, which I thought was
funny. Well, and he looks sort of like a combination of a giant Jakar and Tony Roten, mm-hmm. I know we got O'Quinn too, and gladly we have, you know, 16 fouls or 12 fouls between the two of them.
In summer league,
here's the only thing I'll say about the 9 fouls. If they give you 9 fouls,
use them.
Then you'd be sort of idiotic not to take the 9 fouls.
Idiotic.
So, or 10 fouls. Idiotic. I like Norvell Pell. That's all I'll say. That dude, I'm glad he's on the team.
I don't think there, as far as like something wrong with him, because he hasn't gotten on an NBA team. He wasn't drafted. Like he's 26, but still, I mean, he's a goofball. Like you could tell on the court. Like there was a time, I think it was in the Milwaukee game, where he dropped on a pick and roll, and then they switched, and the point guard was driving at him. Or about to drive at him. And he like taunted the point guard to like come take it to him, like kind of wave, like, come on, bring it sort of thing.
Yeah.
It was very weird to see that in an actual game. He got at one point a big block on then a goaltend, but still celebrated the block, which I thought was, you know, you respect it. It's not the ball. It's not your fault that the ball was coming down. He gets up fast. He does the little things. I think that, for years, it was likely that he was just trying to do too much. And I think at this point, it's gotten sort of drilled into him that he is, you know, just go be Clint Capella. And when I talked to him postgame, he said, they're telling me to drop 1 through 4 on, we're switching 1 through 4, and then I'm dropping 5 on pick and roll, which I think is what the Sixers primarily do with Embiid out there. I wonder if that'll change with Horford. But he's like, I can guard the perimeter. And he was very like adamant about that. So I would have liked to see that a little bit more. But at this point, he's just dropping and affecting shots. And he was third in voting for Defensive Player of the Year in the G League. So he's going to get those block shots. He's going to rebound. And he's going to just fucking bang in a bunch of alley-oops. And he had one. He had like a left-handed alley-oop. And that was just so surprising. He missed a bunch, obviously. But he's going for it. He's trying to dunk absolutely everything in sight. I did think that even though he was blocking like NBA players, like he ripped the ball from Sterling Brown, and blocked Robert Williams like right at the rim, who is a guy that Boston likes and, you know, is trying to make into a cult hero, but he's just like not that good. He pointed to his mom, I'm assuming was his mom in the crowd after he had a huge block and she was like cheering for him, so that was fun. What I did think was, even though he does chase blocks, I couldn't remember in either of the two games any time when he would go get a block. Even Embiid does this, where he has to protect the rim, and then Embiid's guy like sort of slips in right behind them and gets an easy tip dunk behind him. And maybe that's a lot of the other team or the rest of the team like sort of covering for him and rotating well. I sort of can't believe that that's the case since it's summer league, but I thought he did a good job of not leaving the basket so exposed when he's out there. He really was protecting him. I don't know how many blocks he had, but it felt like a lot.
Yeah. And he blocked them hard. Like, he dunked hard. I'm a big Norvell Pell fan. A big fan. So Mariel Shayok, like, so we were talking about Shake Milton, where Summer League is sort of built for guards in a lot of ways because they have the ball, and there's not much of a semblance of an offense. I'll tell you, though, and I did call him a 13th grader, and I think there is a chance that he is just a 13th grader. But Shayok's shot is pretty pure, and he doesn't need a ton of space to get it off, and he's pretty confident. And I am curious to see what he's, you know, what it looks like with NBA speed and NBA closeouts. But he was a little better than I expected, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, same. So he is a good shooter. And was in that Iowa State team the guy who they would go to for a bucket almost all the time. There were a bunch of point guards on the team that moved the ball, driving kick, swinging around, that kind of thing. But when it was, we need a bucket, it was Shayok. And I didn't see much other, especially in college, like dribble drive creation abilities. And to some sense, I still, you know, he's not going to like wow you with anything, but I do think that there was more. If they're going to respect the shot as much as they did in summer league, and he's going to hit it at a regular clip, then he can attack a closeout and make those simple passes. And I thought that there was a couple nice finishes. He had a couple nice scoops off the drive. He's not that fast and he's not that athletic, but he can really score. Like, that is what he is like born to do on an NBA court. And I don't know that there's that ability at the NBA level, but if he's hitting shots, he's going to play. Like, he's 6'6". He can get the shot off really quickly. He doesn't have any creativity with his handle, but and there's a straight line drive of like tunnel vision to him. But if the shot's going to go in, he's going to play. Like, that's as simple as that. And so I think I was thinking that, okay, maybe they're waiting on a two way because who knows if somebody steps up and beats him for a spot. But maybe they're waiting for him because they want to give him a regular roster spot. I don't know. He fits the team ethos. I mean, they need shooters. I didn't see him moving a ton off the ball to get open, but as a safety valve, just stepping into it, I don't see why he couldn't be, you know, a similar on-court presence to, you know, Mike Scott.
You mean offensively?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I was surprised at, and I know everyone said he was a good shooter, but you look at it and you're like, oh, he's definitely legitimately a good shooter. Now, he would not be the first really excellent shooter to not be able to make it in the league. I was more impressed than I thought I would be.
Yeah, same.
And speaking of 13th graders, PJ Dozier is just that, right? Because I'm watching him and I'm like, I don't know. He seems like he can score. He's been around. I mean, what's his deal?
Yeah.
What do you know about him?
I love Dozier coming out of college, unsurprisingly. Big, legitimately 6'7 point guard from South Carolina. It's been, I think, 2 years since he came out. He came out at the same time as Sindarius Thornwell, who was drafted by the Clippers.
Okay.
And he is exactly the same type of player he was. Sort of similar to Shake offensively, where like plays at his own pace. I would say Dozier's probably a little more athletic than Shake is. I would say maybe a lot more athletic, but long point guard facilitator, can control the game, gets a guy on his hip in a pick and roll, and can finish. He had a couple, three, I think, like almost back to back, really nice floaters over Taco Fall on the Celtics, who's 7'6", and off the glass. It was really very impressive. He just and he can he had that reverse dunk that I mentioned earlier off the catch, and he really will work on defense and he drew an offensive foul at one point because he was getting his hands in there and forcing defense to like get pissed off, but it's just the shot. I mean, it's just always going to be the shot, and he didn't really have it at South Carolina, and he hasn't been able to make it consistently. He did hit a couple at Summer League, so maybe if the thing that he's working on is translating, then that's nice. Because he does have touch inside, so it stands to reason why he would have touch from deep. But it'll come down to him hitting threes. And if he has enough threes in Summer League, then I think they could be like, okay, we'll give him a two-way and let him be a, you know, backup point guard here and there when guys get injured, because he does play with an intelligence and pace that is NBA level. He just doesn't have the shot, and his athleticism won't blow you away. But he was on a two-way with the Celtics last year, I think, or at least part of last year. So he's been in that circuit. So I don't know if they see much hope in there.
Christ Kumaji.
It's Christ, sadly.
No.
I don't think he's good. I didn't think he was good at FSU. It was fun to watch him and Taco Fall play against each other. Just two very thin, long fan favorites, just sort of weirdly bumping each other. There was a flagrant foul almost at one point. That was odd.
People went fucking nuts for Taco Fall.
I mean,
they went nuts.
Vegas loves white shooters and tall guys. Like that will excite a Vegas crowd over anything else. So like Korkmaz was a big hit last year, Dalton Ohms this year with Milwaukee, and then Taco. I mean, Kumaji's just not that. He's not smart. He was biting on a lot. Why are you jumping so much? You're 7'4". Like, you don't have to jump to block people's shots, and he just constantly left his feet, and it's like disappointing that a four-year senior at FSU just doesn't do it. I can see how you can be like, hey, for his size, he actually moves his feet pretty well, but I just don't see it. I think that would be a waste of, I mean, they're not going to sign him to a two-way anyway because Pell is already a center, although could you imagine them having two centers on two-ways?
Of course. Why wouldn't
they? Would be pretty good, but I don't see it.
Yeah, I think he stinks. That would be my quick analysis is that he stinks. And there was a Hightower Highsmith sighting. Haywood Highsmith hit a couple of shots. That was about it. Probably maybe a Blue Coats guy.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that they took him off a two-way and then he came back to this team. I figured he would have wanted maybe to impress somebody else. I don't know. I don't know if there's some deal there, if he just likes playing with these guys and thought that it would be, you know, the best situation for him to showcase his ability. I do like a guy who is a role player and does role player things at any level. The shot's got to go in more. I do think he seemed to get it off pretty quick and rise up in transition here and there, and he does leak. He's just such a role player at any level. I would say that he needs to become like a little bit more of a dog. And so I'm probably out on Highsmith for like 2 or 3 years until he's just a grown man and can sort of assert his will a little bit more in a PJ Tucker type way. Obviously not to that level, but he's just got to be, all right, you're a role player. You don't have, if you were the first option on any NBA team, they would win no games. So he's got to do literally everything else. And he works, he hustles, he's not lagging, but I just need to see, he needs to pop, and he doesn't pop on the court really for much at all.
Anybody else on the Summer League roster? I think we would go ahead.
Yeah, they had a guy, Jalen Jones, who played in the first game.
Oh yeah.
Who had a cup of coffee with a couple teams, the New Orleans, Dallas, and Cleveland. Over the past couple of years, he's 26. He's lefty, and so this is a little obvious. But he does have a little like Thad Young to him, of like, or even a little Tobias, of like sort of a big four, long, physical, but just not a absolutely not a passer whatsoever. can just lock in, and he can get you a bucket because he's long and athletic, but I don't think he plays within the a function of an offense. I do think there's some like dog to him. Like he blocked somebody's jumper and then like at the end of the third quarter and then sort of like posed and like looked at him. And like, it was like, it's always funny to see that kind of stuff happening during a game. But I don't trust his touch. I don't think, if he was smart enough to be in the NBA, he certainly has the athleticism. I think he would be there already. So he made a couple things happen. I think he might have been their leading scorer in game one. Even I can't see everybody, Spike. You know, I got to draw the line somewhere.
Your boy, Zion Williamson, is... I know they said they're not playing him anymore because of his knee injury. They're not playing him anymore because he's fucking out of shape. And if that dude does not get in shape, he's going to hurt himself. My message to Zion Williamson, because I know he listens, is get in shape, buddy. Like, this is not a game anymore. Like, you're not playing against children. And if you're not in shape, it's not going to work. Get in shape. That's my message to Zion.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's rusty. But he hadn't played since, you know, March. Decided to sit out everything. It was really cool to watch him sort of do nothing for the first 5 minutes, seem a little awkward, and like try to, like sort of rebelliously try to just shoot threes and be like, no, I can fucking do this. And miss badly. And then he come out after the first time out and just... beat the shit out of the Knicks. It was really very cool to watch him do some stuff. And Mitchell Robinson against him is a really fun matchup because Mitchell's really, really long and has good timing, but he's so thin. And so Zion was just like throwing him around the court. Like Robinson was just getting like beaten on every possession, just like banging into the stanchion and fucking falling down. It was pretty cool. It was a really cool atmosphere to see it. I see you have RJ Barrett on the rundown. Do you have any RJ Barrett thoughts?
I don't have any takes. I was just curious if you did.
Yeah, he's bad. He's bad.
Yeah.
He was 4 of 18. And suddenly there's Evan Turner. There's a lot of Evan Turner in RJ Barrett.
He's a much better athlete than Evan Turner.
Okay. He's longer for sure. And goes like at the rim more for sure.
Yeah.
But I don't think he has Turner's like touch. He's a decent passer when he wants to be, but he so often doesn't want to be.
Yeah.
He misses some shots so badly that like, for a guy who's as highly touted as him, I'm just like, I don't think he has it. I really don't. And I feel for the Knicks because Kevin Knox played well and was hitting shots, and that was an exciting part of the game.
People seem sort of out on him. And I know statistically he had a really bad year.
Yeah.
But to my eye, when I watched him a few times last year, I sort of liked him. I like Kevin Knox.
Yeah, I think he has ability for sure. He was like one of the youngest players in the draft last year, if not the youngest. So to be out that quickly is, I think, a little crazy. But RJ, no thank you.
When do you leave?
Some point today. I'll probably turn on the women's soccer game and catch the rest of that. It's weird being... I mean, when I started coming here like 7 years ago, it was not this popular. And I wish it wasn't. Like, not from like an old guy get off my lawn sense, but from like weird summer league is better when like people don't know about it as much. Do you know what I'm saying?
Like, yes.
It's become very... Everybody's getting there. Like I started coming here like before Instagram, which is kind of a crazy thing to say because it feels like a different generation. But there was a weirdness to it. And you still have it. Like I saw John Collins just like playing blackjack by himself. And it's like, he should be, he's too famous and too good to be playing blackjack alone. But yeah, there's always going to be that because Vegas is just a weird place. And Vegas plus like, you know, thousands of basketball people. Just being around is a weird combination. But I miss the days when it's like an empty gym and like guys playing in front of nobody and you can hear them talking and stuff, not like sort of, I don't know. I guess I miss the old days. Maybe I am an old guy, get off my lawn just for summer league.
Well, it reminded me of when I worked in music radio, South by Southwest, I remember when I worked in Chicago, so that was like 06, 07. And some guys, these guys, Gordon and Kevin, they worked for me and they always went down there. And it looked really fun then. But I look at it now and I'm like, well, I wish I went then because I definitely missed the chance to go when it was something that I would have thought was hilarious and fun. And I look at Summer League and I'm just like, eh, it looks fun, but it looks like too much of what it is. Mm. And I would more be annoyed than I would have fun as opposed to if I'd gone 7 or 8 years ago.
It is still special in such a weird way. I would recommend if you want to go and try to recapture that to go during the week. The first weekend is still right. Like the highlights of like seeing everybody for the first time, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I do love being here. It's such a fucking weird place, and you're seeing all these same people like year after year, and you're like, still doing it. What a bizarre thing. And I'm getting, well, I don't know when we're going to release the Mike Does Interviews segment of it, but like, I'd say I'm getting better at being an actual journalist, but I don't like it. I don't like it still. I ask more questions in the Scrum. It makes me uncomfortable. Don't like it. I mean, asking questions to, Dario or Choo Choo or whatever on the live pod, that's fun. I enjoy that. But like, there's something about a Scrum that just like, I'm not good. I don't feel comfortable ever.
I think next weekend is the time to release that, actually. Okay. I'm working on a schedule. We'll talk about that. And the other thing, so our designer Tanner, per my suggestion. So before we go, if you've listened to this podcast for years, you've known that Al Horford is a guy that we've always admired from afar.
That's right.
I don't mean to shit on Celtics fans, but they didn't really understand, I don't think, his value. I think that's a fair thing to say, right?
Yeah, they didn't appreciate him.
Yeah, they didn't appreciate him, and they looked at traditional stats and, how do you give a guy a max who averages 13 points and 6 rebounds? And the whole time, I think you, I, and our, like, the community here was always like, that guy contributes to winning. That guy is in the right place. He makes the right pass. So we do have an Al Horford appreciator shirt that is coming very soon, probably will be released this week. Just to show your support for a guy who has not been given enough support in his previous two stops.
Yeah, he's always been a Sixer. Never a Hawk.
Yes.
Certainly never a Celtic.
No. Always, it was always destined for him to come here. So keep your eyes open for that. As we have always appreciated Al Horford, unlike the Celtics and Hawks fans who never quite appreciated him.
The little things.
Little things. Yep. He good pass. He passes up a good shot to get a great shot. And that's what we've always seen in him. Have a safe trip home.
Thank you, man.
All right. Are you down with TTP?
Yeah. You know that. We are the murderers there. That with the jail and we murdered the murderers there. Then with the hell and discovered the devil delivered some hurt and despair. Used to have powder to push. Now I smoke pounds of the push. Holy, I'm burning the bush. Now I give a fuck about none of this shit. True runner over and out of this bitch. Step into the spotlight. Copying of uppers and downers get done. I'm in a rush to be numb. Dropping 1,000 ain't much. Cup on the clouds on a missile.